Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On our show today, Teaching the Wire. The HBO series earned legions of fans and was lauded as some of the best TV ever produced.
Now, from Berkeley to Harvard Law School to Dorchester, The Wire is being used as a teaching tool. Proponents say it's a powerful way to explain what ails America and to help young people at risk. Critics say it has no place in the classroom.
That's later on today's Talker. But first,
it's not a political book. It really is a book of lessons, and I'm proud of it.
Governor Deval Patrick's long-anticipated memoir, A Reason to Believe, won't hit bookstores until April. But Boston Globe reporter Michael Levinson managed to get his hands on an early copy, and his review appeared in today's paper. He joins us now. Michael Levinson, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks.
Okay, so let's start out, if we can, with the big headline that your piece revealed about the book, and that's that Governor Patrick takes on some of the difficulties from his first term, including his family's, particularly his wife's, Diane, struggle to adapt with public life. And he says it was so hard that he considered resigning just weeks after he took office. Can you tell us a little bit more about what he says in the book about that?
Sure. Well, we've known previously that his wife, Diane, had struggled with depression. But in the book, he speaks much more candidly about how difficult that was and what a toll his campaign and his first days in office took on their marriage. She was admitted to McLean Hospital for treatment and was so despondent about the prospect of facing 4 years in the public eye that he had long, serious discussions with her about resigning.
And in fact, you reveal in your article that in his book, he writes actually in a deeply affecting way about it, that she woke up in the middle of the night one night, the day after there was an article, a critical article about the governor that appeared in the Globe, and she basically said, "I don't know if I can take any more of this."
That's right. He writes quite movingly at points about how painful it was for her to be in the public eye, and there was a series of stories throughout the campaign that had really stripped away her sense of self. She'd always prided herself on being a successful labor lawyer and a community activist, and he describes going to bed one night, and right before they go to sleep, he warns her that a story will be coming out in the morning about, in the Globe, about a call that he had made on behalf of AmeriQuest Mortgage. It was a controversial subprime mortgage lender that was seeking some financial assistance from Citibank, and the governor was a former board member. The governor has acknowledged that was an innocent but dumb move, but nevertheless, it was going to appear in the morning's papers, and he writes that they turned out the light, and then, to quote the book, he says, "Diane awoke after a fitful sleep. She nudged me awake and said she just couldn't face another critical story. She began to cry and shake. When I asked her what was wrong, she said, 'I just hate this. I hate this. This is what the next 4 years are going to be like.'"
And in fact, what I found really remarkable is that you reveal that in his book he says that they said they weren't going to decide if he was going to resign until after she was discharged from McLean Hospital, so quite some time there.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote that being governor is an episode in my life. Diane is my life. Does he write anything else about, he obviously does write a little bit more about his time on Beacon Hill, but that doesn't seem like it's the bulk of the book from what you report.
That's correct. Most of the book actually deals with his life before entering politics, and it traces in a sort of nostalgic way his boyhood in Chicago, and he describes his relatives and his neighborhood and the way people spoke there and the foods they ate. Then he describes what it was like to come from that very poor area on the south side of Chicago, predominantly black neighborhood, to go to Milton Academy, you know, a elite prep school, and then on to Harvard and Harvard Law School, and the kind of difficult passage that he took navigating those various worlds.
And difficult, I mean, even in places like Milton, as you said, which is an elite academy, but yet he writes that he encountered racism there.
Yep, and that's something he's spoken about previously. You know, he's mentioned that, you know, once when he was a Milton student, you know, he was walking outside of campus and was stopped by a police officer there. And in the book, he talks about, you know, he was once called a racial epithet by a teacher there, and there's other episodes that he details that sort of reveal how he had to navigate some pretty tough terrain as a black man coming into Milton and Harvard at that time.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like while we here in Massachusetts might have thirsted for a book that delves into the nitty-gritty of what it's like to be a governor of the Bay State, that's not what he's delivering here. It sounds like it is kind of a get-to-know-you for the rest of America.
That's exactly right. I mean, as he writes in the acknowledgments, the book is going to disappoint a lot of people who were looking forward to a kiss-and-tell story about Massachusetts politics and the rogues and rascals he's met up here at the State House. Instead, this book is clearly aimed at, you know, introducing him to a national audience that doesn't know him as well, and he'll tell the, you know, somewhat familiar arc of his story for that audience, and also delves into his relationship with the president, you know, which is obviously significant as the president gears up for re-election and, you know, potentially the governor were to look at some higher office or national position in his future.
Well, Michael Levinson, your article today obviously got we in the media all hot under the collar about this. So a lot of reporters on Beacon Hill asked the governor today about whether or not he does have national ambitions. Here is what he said.
I don't know how to answer that, except to say I don't have any plans or interest in running for anything else than governor of Massachusetts. This is what I'm focused on. At the same time, I believe in certain distinctive American values, and that they need to be held up and celebrated, and that they have made a difference in our ability to sustain and promote the American dream through generations. And I think we ought to be talking about those, and that's part of what I'm trying to do in this book.
So the emphasis on distinctive American values does have the same ring as we heard in or read in President Obama's book, The Audacity of Hope. So tell us a little bit more about what Governor Patrick writes about the intimacies of his friendship and relationship with President Obama.
Sure. He talks about the first time he met the president. It was in the mid-1990s when he was introduced by Abner Mikva, a judge from Chicago who put them two together as, you know, young legal eagles. And it goes on to talk about, you know, sharing dinner with the Obamas on Martha's Vineyard, and the governor tells a story about being invited backstage immediately after Obama accepted the Democratic nomination in 2008. He comes backstage and, you know, Obama kind of says, "Was it all right?" And the governor, so deeply moved, didn't say anything, just nodded. So, you know, you could say showing off his intimacy with the president in the book at points.
And Well, does that make you think that, you know, with President Obama gearing up for re-election and another intense presidential campaign, that the book may somehow be positioning Governor Patrick as, you know, this close confidant of the president and therefore maybe a spokesperson for him on the national stage?
I think that's definitely one possibility. And, I mean, clearly at one level, the crassest level, it's just a good selling point for the book that the guy knows the president. That might be a reason people would pick it up and buy it in a bookstore. And it also does help make the case that he's a credible spokesman, surrogate, as they say in the business, for the president once the campaign heats up.
So, Michael Levinson, you've been following the career of Deval Patrick very closely, you know, ever since he decided to enter Massachusetts politics. What do you think this book serves for him? I mean, I know the governor said repeatedly that he's not going to run for national office. He doesn't talk much about what he's going to do after this term, his second term ends. But what does it feel like this book is trying to do for him?
Well, clearly, it's going to make him a lot of money. He's taken a $1.35 million advance for the book. But at another level, it raises his national profile, and it's not clear how he's going to use that. As you heard in that clip today, he speaks of wanting to uphold distinctly American values on a national level. He wants to be part of some larger conversation than simply the debate going on here on Beacon Hill. And, you know, he's entering an interesting phase in his public life where he'll be taking a trade mission to Israel and the United Kingdom next month. He'll be going out on this book tour. Clearly, he has his eyes set on something beyond the State House, and whether that's elective office or some other position, we don't know yet. But this book helps position him for that next, and I imagine, larger stage.
Michael Levinson, reporter for the Boston Globe, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, coming up after a quick break, the HBO series The Wire. It was critically acclaimed, but should it be used as a teaching tool? Harvard professor Charles Ogletree is doing just that.
Listeners will be asking for your calls and comments in just a moment. But before then, we're asking for your participation in another way.
Shows like Radio Boston depend on listener support. And right now, WBUR has a great way for you to help continue public radio programming like ours and get a beautiful Valentine's Day gift at the same time. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Here are colleagues Dolores Handy and Andrew Phelps with more.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is free. Please keep it that way with your financial support. Go to WBUR.org and click the donate button at the top of the screen.